Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by WitchSchool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, everyone. This is Samara Luna.
And this is Raven Dahl.
And this is the Tree of Life Hour. The Tree of Life Hour is brought to you by the Tree of Life Community Center, a nonprofit group of people in the Louisville, Kentucky area that are trying to create space for people of earth-based religions and philosophies. And our show is all about the community, things we want the community to know or be discussing, or that we think they should be. Anyway, so tonight's show, we had originally scheduled a guest, Deborah Castiano, I think I'm saying her name right, not sure, who is the author of a Glamour Magic book, which is really, really awesome. The show got an advanced copy to look at, so we'd be able to ask questions and stuff on the show, and it's really good. But we're going to try to get her rescheduled, so hopefully she'll be back on the next couple weeks. Just wasn't able to come on tonight. Something came up. So I guess our last-minute thing will be doing Chasing Squirrels. Sound good to you?
It sounds good to me.
So,
you said you were reading an article a minute ago. I was going to say,
what?
Samara, a second ago you told me you were reading an article on the wild hunt.
Yes, and I didn't get to finish reading it, so I'm bringing it up right now. So, what's going on is this is in Texas, Alvarado, Texas. Did you get a chance to read this article about the girl?
No, I've not. That's one I've not read.
Okay, so this one I think was just released today. Yeah, it was just released today. So, there is a girl in Texas that she has a condition called type 1 neurofibromatosis. Have you ever heard of that?
No, that's a rare thing.
Yeah, it says, in which individuals are born with or develop tumors in various parts of their body. Her mom says that she wasn't supposed to live past 9, but she's actually 17 now. So I think it was her brother got married, he actually married someone, it looks like, that was Wicca. And the daughter, Rebecca, actually started looking into it and found out more about it.
Uh-huh.
So she got into Wicca. She wrote about how silver had healing properties and such, that necklaces would bother her neck. It irritated her neck.
Uh-huh.
And so she had found a bunch of information about piercings with sacred intent.
Uh-huh.
And convinced her mother to allow her to get a lip piercing because of its proximity to the throat chakra and thought it would help.
Okay.
And the piercing was actually solderized because it's not intended to be removed.
Right.
So, and then it goes on to say she tried to dye her hair silver, but it went blue.
Huh.
So she's got blue hair and a lip piercing. Okay, so her previous school, they were fine with the hair, but she got a pass for the lip piercing because they provided information to the school saying that she was Wiccan and she believed in the sacred piercings and she's using the silver, you know, piercing to help with healing, and so they gave her a pass for it. Okay,
right,
a dispensation. Mm-hmm. So they moved out to the country because she wanted to be closer to nature. And the new school in Alvarado that she's going to, they apparently are not taking any of it. Apparently, the local news station did a report on it and said that she said that piercings were required part of Wicca, and she never said that. So they've got this stuff saying that, you know, that she said this and she didn't say it. And so there's a little bit of a bias going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So she got, you know, like the information together. And brought it to the school. And they said no. So they pretty much told her, I'm trying to find the exact quote. But when I was reading this, I think I just may have skipped something. But it says that she spent 6 hours researching because the school actually said, oh, there you go, basically said she's full of it and it's not a religion.
Really?
And she said, yeah, that's what the mom said, that they basically said she's full of it, it's not a religion. And then the district official said, please know it is not out, and this is a quote from the Cleveland Times Review reporter, please know it is not Alvarado ISD's policy or practice to dismiss a student medical or religious claim that was accompanied by appropriate evidence. Mom said her daughter was pressed to produce a Church of Wicca or a revealed text as appropriate evidence. She spent 6 hours researching to try to find a Wiccan or pagan congregation in the area to no avail.
Oh, wow.
So it says they both... Yeah, and they both tried to address the inaccuracies in the original news report by posting comments because part of their concern was that the reporter conflated questions of religion and health, such as when the daughter described as having given school officials a packet of information explaining her religion and why piercings are important. The result with school officials was that she was told she was to be suspended from school if she showed up looking like that again. Then the mom asked for time to allow the hair color, which was already fading, to grow out. The request was declined. So they had to bleach it out. Clumps of her hair fell out because her body was still recovering from chemotherapy. Because she originally asked for the extra time because she didn't think her daughter's hair could withstand another process.
Right.
So now she's wearing a wig in school. And then she says, while she was given the alternative instead to learn from home, the daughter wanted to attend school strongly enough that she used pliers to remove the piercing.
Oh, no. Wow.
So, yeah, that's what she's going through.
Poor kid.
Now, what do you think, though? Do you think that her mom should have let her get the piercing? Because that part is kind of debatable.
Yeah, that part is debatable. But here's the thing, there is some medical evidence for a certain type of piercing in the ear, a tragus piercing, and migraines. It helps with migraines. But then again, you know, I myself work for an employer where as much as I really want purple hair, and I really want purple hair, I can't because, well, my employer has said, no. So, and it just, it's not becoming of a professional appearance, which is kind of a different thing, really. I mean, personally,
They understood the hair thing. It's just they didn't want to kill her hair and have it fall out.
Right, and I do get that. But, you know, my big thing is the whole religious claim, and they basically, sounds like the school just basically out and out ignored it.
Because there are many paths, even within Wicca. I mean, not just within paganism, but even within Wicca, there's many paths. Just like there's, you know, many paths within Christianity or, you know, within different churches. And
No, I agree.
And she does, you know, in Wicca does teach in the healing elements of herbs and metals.
Mm-hmm.
And if she found the documentation on sacred piercing, I mean, it may not be specifically Wicca, but it is still a belief.
Right. And if it helps her, I mean, you know, this girl's fighting cancer. If it helps, it helps. I mean, I'm not one to question anything that will help somebody who's fighting cancer. You know, be it conventional, be it unconventional. It sounds like, you know, and I'll admit, you know, part of it sounds a little unconventional, but, you know, I also know that tragus piercings help with migraines.
And today's piercings.
Huh?
It's a dace piercing.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a dace. Sorry.
Because I have two. So, but yeah, I can see where this can become a sticky situation. But she had enough knowledge to back up her decision, and she had enough knowledge and research put into it to say, here's all the evidence of why I believe this.
Mhm.
And it's like they didn't even listen
sounds
to
like,
it.
Well, and when they're asking for revealed text, that says a lot there, because, you know, there is no one revealed text in any pagan faith, really.
Text Scott Cunningham's solitary practitioner. So here you go.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's just, yeah, to ask for a revealed text, or even to say, oh, you need to provide us with a church. So, I mean, I know Christians that don't go to church.
But we don't organize ourselves. Yeah. Not every
so,
group.
Yeah, I think they're asking for a little much.
Well, this is Texas we're talking about here. Texas, which made Kentucky look good. Hey, sorry.
That's pretty bad, too.
Yeah, well, if it wasn't for Texas, Mississippi, we would be the joke of the nation.
So I'm going to let you take over this next one because I know you've already shared it.
Are you talking about the archaeological find, the recent one?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So there has been a recent archaeological find, and they've actually been able to get DNA evidence that a woman buried in a warrior grave in Scandinavia was actually a woman. And there is much rejoicing amongst the internet nerddom.
Hi, this is Ulf. I'm going to chime in on this one. So we've found so-called shield maiden graves before. That's actually not new. What makes this a big one, what Raven is leaving out, is what makes this a big one is the way she was buried proves she was someone of high note. She was a landowner, a ruler, possibly even a jarl, which is something we haven't discovered historically before. The Vikings had no problems with female warriors and rulers, but we've never actually discovered a buried female who was that high a station before. And the proof of it is in the quality of weapons buried with her and the fact that there were two horses buried with her, and horses were usually only buried with high nobles. And the fact that there were two with her says a lot. So that's what really makes this super significant. Sorry, I was in the background. I couldn't let that one go.
I thought it was funny.
I might have to go finger smacking a little later. I was getting to that, Ol.
So she's basically a real life Largitha.
Yay! And I love Largitha.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what led to them discovering that, right? Tell them that part.
Actually, that's the one thing I did not know.
Basically, they were doing some research, and somebody noticed, hey, these don't look like a man's hips. The hip region and pelvis region is all wrong. So they did some more checking because they can do a lot more with DNA now than they could many years ago when this burial was discovered. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, they found out that what they thought was he was in fact a she. So this is actually pretty big news in the archaeological world. And pretty good news in the heathen world. You know, like I said, we've never discovered someone of that high station that was a female before. We don't consider it a bad thing. It's just a, wow, there you go. Cool. See more proof that, you know, heathens don't discriminate against our women. Warriors are warriors. Heathens are heathens. We don't. Which is something my buddy Bowley and I touch on in a broadcast we just recently did. It won't get to the public for a while, but it's there.
Sorry,
I'll leave your show alone now. Bye, guys.
Yeah, actually, it's really, really cool. Now, there is one blog out there, Carl Siegfried's Norse mythology blog, where he's kind of saying that, you know, that there are some scholars who still think that this is controversial, that the science on it hasn't been settled yet. And he raises some interesting points. I don't know that I necessarily agree with him. But, you know, it does raise some interesting points enough to say, you know, well, maybe the science is still out. But personally, I'm like, yes, there's a real life Largitha. And for those of you who do not know what I'm talking about, the TV show Vikings, oh my gosh. It's amazing. It's amazing. And something I'm very happy about also, since I'm kind of talking about Vikings anyway, in a roundabout way, I actually got to see the Comic-Con panel for the show recently. And they actually were talking to Alex Ho, who plays Ivar the Boneless, and they're and he actually talked about kind of a few of the things inspired his performance and stuff, and the fact that, you know, initially he didn't even audition for Ivar. He auditioned for another one of Ragnar's sons, but they gave him Ivar. And he talked about kind of about his performance and the way he approached playing Ivar. And, you know, personally, I think it's awesome because, you know, the story of Ivar the Boneless is just insane. So, but yeah. Anyway, back to what we were talking about, though. You know, this whole finding about a female warrior skeleton is awesome. And I honestly, a lot of it has to do with, in a lot of societies, when they started doing archaeology, they really didn't know how to tell male skeletons from female skeletons. And the more they've done, the more they've been able to confirm. And now they've got all this research and DNA and all this other stuff. So I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, that was, and it's big news, even, I mean, for the heathen community and for, you know, historical information even.
Personally wanting to get my hands on the actual journal article because that's a me thing. I read journal articles for fun and excitement, but you know this about me, and actually really get a good read up on it. But, yeah. But you know, for now, it's like, yay! But this is a huge deal, and I think it's awesome, and I'm very happy about it. So what else do you have on your radar over there, Samara? I know you got something over there.
There is a new website that has emerged featuring interviews with pagan leaders from around the world. Pagan Portraits, as it is called, is an English language site based on a French site that was originally launched in 2015. The goal of the project is to present interviews of modern and inspiring pagans, heathens, and polytheists from all over the world and from various polytheistic religions, traditional as well as neo-pagan. We want to show by this way incredible wealth of this pagan way of life, giving inspiration to all the members of the worldwide pagan community. This is the first I've heard of it. I'm definitely going to have to check that out.
I know, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I wonder if Oz, with that.
Huh?
I wonder if Oz has a hand in that.
I'm sure he's got an interview out there.
I'm sure he does.
Let's see what else. Mystic South is returning next year. Yay. Oh, and that reminds me, for those that don't know, I'm having a brain glitch with the name of the festival. The one in Atlanta with all the pagan music.
Caldera.
Yeah, Caldera Fest has this been postponed until 2019.
Really?
Yes. Apparently low ticket sales have postponed it. However, what it is they've already paid for a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they say most of the vendors are actually working with them and giving them
mm-hmm.
the opportunity to use their credits for what they've already purchased since they canceled it far enough in advance, that they're
mm-hmm.
able to use the credits that they've already paid for and put it towards, you know, later on. And 2019 is the latest they can go, like that spring. So they're going
mm-hmm.
to do it in 2019. It's going to give them more time to get everything organized and sell more tickets and do what they need to do to make it a good festival. From what I understand, they are offering refunds for people that already bought tickets as soon as they have the funds, you know, freed up to offer them, you know, to give them the money. But for people that bought tickets and know that they're going to want to go in 2019, your tickets will be valid for it.
Well, that's good. So I wonder what the issue is, or do you even know?
I think the main thing is that it was just low ticket sales.
I was going to say, because I know Tuatha Dé would be there, right?
I don't know if they were actually scheduled or not. I mean, they were still announcing stuff, so who knows? Because, you know, they were still announcing different, you know, different acts. So, I mean, because you can schedule acts up into like a month. I mean, I've seen places that have announced, you know, people coming in like a week before.
Yeah. But I'm like, man, because, yeah. I missed my chance to see Tuatha Dé last summer.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I know.
We gotta get them back in Louisville sometime.
Yes, we do. We do. We need to plot. Any listeners out there want to help us plot? We need a Tuatha Dé concert in Louisville as soon as possible.
Yes.
Besides,
that'd be nice.
You know, very rarely do I get to see my other half get up and dance, and he will actually get up and dance during Tuatha Dé, which I think is awesome.
So, did you hear about the Odinist group in the UK?
No, you've got something on me that I did not hear about that one.
So an open letter was sent to the Archbishop of Canterbury by the UK-based Odinist Fellowship asking for the return of sacred sites now occupied by Christian churches. These stolen buildings must be returned, writes Odinist Fellowship leader Ralph Harrison. The fellowship established by Harrison in 1996 was formed after a split with the Odinic Rite, an Odinist group originally established by John Yell.
Odinic Rite. Okay.
Yeah. As a result of the 2006 legal case, Royal Mail PLC versus Holden, the Odinic Rite reportedly became the first Odinist group to be granted charitable status in the UK in 1988. On its website, the current Odin Fellowship states that it seeks to increase awareness of one of the original faiths present in the UK as practiced by the Saxons, Angles, and Jutes. Additionally, the organizer asked for an apology for the persecution of Odinists. According to the open letter, the fellowship wants two churches, one located in Canterbury and the other in York's provinces. This will, according to Harrison, compensate for the temple grounds which were stolen by Christian missionaries like St. Augustine. And they said the snatching of pagan property equals spiritual genocide, and claims that the huge swaths of stolen property are currently under control of the Church of England.
Oh. Yeah, well, I have my opinions about the Odinic Rite, so I wonder what this group's beliefs are, because
they broke off, but they had to have broken off from him for a reason.
Yeah, well, Odinic Rite is pretty hardcore right wing. 1488 types. Here in the U.S., for sure.
Well, this says that the Bishop of Chichester, sorry if I'm saying that wrong, responded to the claims by writing back that he remains uncertain concerning evidence for the strength of the Odinist faith in modern day Britain. Says while the church is reportedly responded politely, reaction in the general pagan community has been mixed, with people expressing their views predominantly over social media. It says those pagans involved in academic research, including archaeology, have been pointing out that the overall issue of sacred sites being stolen is in itself contentious. They observed, for example, that many of the alleged historical pagan temples were not converted at all. London, for example, has evidence of a temple of Isis, but it is not known whether it lies beneath one of the city's churches or elsewhere. The West Country has remnants of temples to unknown Romano-British deities, and the complex of Aquafilus in Bath and the temple complex at Lydney in Gloucestershire were subsequently occupied by the church. Looking specifically at the claims of the fellowship, they seem to relate to two historical episodes, the conversion of King Ethelbert, and the destruction of an Odinist temple in Goodmanham in Yorkshire.
Yeah. Ethelbert, the whole, yeah. I know a little bit about the whole conversion story, but I don't know. I kind of think what they're wanting is kind of a stretch in a way.
It says that in an essay titled Anglo-Saxon Pagan Shrines and Their Prototypes, John Blair wrote, several hundred years of archaeological excavation have not produced a single example of an Anglo-Saxon church built over the foundation of any pre-Christian structure, let alone one recognized as a temple building.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that Hofs tended to be made out of wood, so they may not have survived, number one. And number two, You know, that would be my big question is, what does the archaeological evidence say? What do the archaeological scholars say? You know, like I said, I'm kind of dubious, but then again, I'm dubious with anything that has anything to do with Odinic Rite or came out of Odinic Rite, but also don't know why this group split or anything either. They might actually not be crazy like the Odinic Rite is here in the States, but the Odinic Rite here in the States tends to help give heathens a bad rap. Because they tend to be blood and soil types.
I don't honestly, I doubt that they get anything out of it.
Yeah, I doubt they do too. I mean, you know, the question is there archaeological proof to back up their claim? That is my big question right there. You know, and then if there is archaeological proof, because, I mean, we already know that British Heritage is letting the Druids use Stonehenge for solstices already. You know, so archaeological proof, I would imagine the Church of England would either A, come up with, if nothing else, come up with a way to kind of share the property. At least that's just my take on it and my take on, you know, the situation. You've actually found something I didn't know about. So.
Holy cow, I beat you at finding something.
You did, you
that was
did.
It was just because it was on Wild Hunt.
Yeah.
Yes, and for those listening, Wild Hunt is where we do get a lot of our information because they do go out and find all the pagan news and put it in one place. So if you can support them, please do. Wildhunt.org, and they actually have a donate link right on their site. So it's where you can get all the pagan news. So we just vocalize the stuff that looks interesting to us.
Yeah.
And put it in audio.
Have you talked about Philadelphia yet?
No, I was just looking at this one. Why don't you go on and tell us a little bit?
So apparently Philadelphia's Pagan Pride Day got crashed, or at least attempted to get crashed by a whole bunch of fundamentalist Christians.
Yes. They were blocked from entering the Pagan Pride Day. They were asked if they had a permit, and they moved back to the sidewalk. And it says that the folks in the community blocked their path, and the person that runs it said they demanded to see the permit. It says the group, which are members of Keys of David Church, led by Pastor Aiden Rustfelt, then retreated to the center at the entrance to the park, and in a YouTube video uploaded by the pastor, he says, "We only moved back to the sidewalk because they had a permit for the park. It was a good one-hour preach. Pray these witches and warlocks hit rock bottom and get saved." Also says that Rustfelt used terms like like rectum wreckers to describe gays, and derided witches and Muslims. Says his wife then spoke briefly, followed by another male that Schreier believes their son. And they said he was the one, I believe, who kept asking a young teen from our group about how many abortions she had.
Yeah. Yeah,
and he also said that, and one of the vendors said that they started all of this right in front of the children activities tent. And they also had young children with them carrying signs and shouting.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is like, what the videos that I was watching, which actually was kind of funny, a lot of the pagans did, and the funny thing is that this actually helped drive off the protesters. Apparently, they made a run on smudge sticks at one of the vendor booths, right? And then after that, what they did, which was hilarious, they kind of formed in a circle and started chanting and burning smudge sticks around the protesters. The protesters were complaining, of course, about the smoke. So apparently they literally helped smoke them out. You know, they didn't really do anything except chant and burn sage. It's like, okay, you know, perfect. Sage, you know, once again, proof that sage purifies things and drives out negative energy and bad, icky things.
But the police did end up getting called because things started to get pretty heated between the two groups, and the police came. And they lined up between them with their faces facing the pagan group. And they said that the police officers did a really good job. They said, despite the fact that the police had their faces to us, they were not hostile towards us at all. A couple of them even rolled their eyes at some of the things the extremists were saying.
Oh, yeah. And Rob's got a lot of that on his YouTube page. And we've actually had Rob on our show before.
Oh, we have?
Yep.
Rob Shire?
Yeah, he's
one of his.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
When did we have him on? Let's give him a little credit.
He was on, most recently we had him on when we were talking about Charlottesville.
Oh, okay. Oh, really? That was him. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had Rob on our show before. Yeah. And we had him on Heathen Perspective a couple times talking about InReach. And I've had him on a couple of other times too. But yeah, no, we've had him on the show before.
So did you see what else happened in Philadelphia at the same time?
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
So, or no, maybe it wasn't Philadelphia. No, it was Greenville, North Carolina. So in Greenville,
oh, you're talking
the same
about
day.
The church. You're talking about, yeah, the street preacher outside the pagan shop.
Yeah. So on the same day in Greenville, the metaphysical shop Sojourner Whole Earth Provisions was protested by two Christian street evangelists. And around 4 p.m., store apothecary manager Courtney Vanado noticed a man known as EC Street Preacher in front of the store. He had a large sign which read, "Who Will Jesus Damn?" with a list of sinners, a video camera mounted to a hand truck, and orange caution cones. Another street evangelist, Portable Evangelist is their name. By the way, that's their name, Portable Evangelist, parked his truck at the end of the block and invited people to seek him out if they wanted someone to pray with. So Mrs. Barnado went out to talk with EC Street Preacher. After a short time, store owner Michelle Jenkins, more widely known to the pagan community as Heron, joined the discussion and says she enjoys talking about religions and often takes part in interfaith events. She goes, "I chose to engage him as a fellow member of clergy with the hopes that I could help clarify those misconceptions for him and his viewers. This is how I accept my fellow man, listening to and honoring their right to worship the gods of their choice. That will also defend our rights to differ," she explained. She actually did post some of it on Facebook, some of the exchange. But it says, while Heron chose dialogue to deal with the situation, Bernardo's husband, a North Heathen, chose humor.
I saw that picture.
Did you see the picture?
Yes.
So he teaches heathenry in rooms at the shop, and after hearing about what was happening, he showed up with his own sign. It read in response to the list of sinners, the EC Street Preacher sign said, "Jesus will damn." He had one that said, "But Odin is okay with him."
Yeah, he kind of is. Especially if you can swing a sword. Yeah, that was kind of funny. I saw that sign. I'm like, yes, that's great. That's absolutely wonderful.
And it looks like it actually helped because it says that while these exchanges were taking place, pagans, hearing about the action, started to arrive at the shop. Because we were getting such an excited turnout of customers in the shop, Courtney chose to remain open a whole hour after we normally close, giving EC and Nate plenty of extra time to talk, says Karen. So it says that in over 8 years of business at this location, they've never had any protesters or drawn the attention of street preachers. It says they did find a prayer circle happening one morning in 2015 at the entrance area of their shop, but the group fled as they arrived, leaving behind crosses, drawing an anointing oil on the windows and doors.
Aw, silly Christian. Sorry. And that's okay, never mind. That's me being a fundamentalist pagan. That's still funny. There is another thing we do need to talk about when we're done with this topic here, because it's kind of on a similar vein, although it doesn't specifically talk about paganism. I don't know if you know about the court thing that's been going on here in Kentucky.
I'm not sure, but do you want to take a break first and then you can talk about it?
Yeah, that'd be fun. Let's take a quick break.
Okay, let me find a song real quick. How about Incubus? We haven't played Incubus for a little bit.
Yeah,
Into the Fae. It's almost sound.
That'll work.
So Into the Fae sounds appropriate for me. This is the abridged version, by the way. I have no idea how long, with the unabridged version, how long it would be, but this is the abridged version. So here we go, Incubus and Into the Fae. Thank you.
All right, we are back. Before we go into Kentucky State, there's something I want to bring up that we actually missed, and I did not see it until there was a Facebook post about it after the event. This, for those of you that listen to our show, know that Louisville Pagan Pride was this last Saturday. And apparently there was a news story on the Wild Hunt. And
oh, really?
The news story on Wild Hunt, yeah. The news story on Wild Hunt, actually it was posted on, when was it posted? August 31st, I think. August 30th. So we hadn't done a Chasing Squirrels episode before, you know, it was before that. And I just had missed it. I didn't see the story until someone mentioned it on Facebook. Louisville Pagan Pride was actually threatened to be sued.
What?
Because, yeah. So what happened is someone that wanted to do a workshop, Virginia Beach, she put in her thing to do her workshop, and then she requested a sign language interpreter because she's deaf.
Uh-huh.
So their reaction at first, and I've been on this specific Pagan Pride Day board. The budget is very, very small for our Pagan Pride Day, okay?
I knew that.
So they at first denied the request because it was not in the budget. Now, if you can show that it's an undue burden, even money-wise, it is legal. But you do have to show that in court. So she threatened to sue them. She actually had responded with, "Do you have it in your budget to hire a lawyer when I sue you for violation of federal law? The Americans with Disability Act clearly states you cannot discriminate on the basis of disability. You cannot refuse to provide an interpreter. You simply don't want to have to do it." Now, and I know the board, I know they probably completely talked about it. I know it's something that they probably didn't want to deny, but I know the budget's very small. And like I said, it is legal to deny it if your budget is very small, because Wild Hunt even talked to a lawyer that said that, where is that at? Once open to the public, they have to create equal opportunities for participation in all capacities. And this is coming from a lawyer, and she says this holds true for any volunteer, attendee, presenter, or vendor who attends the event. Dern noted there are circumstances when an event doesn't have to provide accommodations for attendees with disabilities. She said if the attendee doesn't ask for accommodation until they arrive at the event, then they can claim that while they want to accommodate, it creates undue burden because they can't instantly procure the accommodation. Another circumstance may be if the event could experience financial hardship in providing the needed accommodation. Usually expense alone is not adequate to claim undue burden. She went on to say if the expense occurred from the accommodation would be their entire budget, that is legitimate defense. So the question is, how much would it have been? And someone actually brought up on Facebook, well, why didn't they check with, because there's a global school for the blind here. And there's also a hearing, a deaf school too, and that are pretty nationally known in that they could have asked for maybe a volunteer from the deaf school. So
yeah, but from what I understand, they do charge for interpreter services.
Right. So so Louisville Pagan Pride sent out a quote, and it says, when asked to provide an interpreter for a disabled person wishing to present a workshop, we looked at how much it would cost to hire an interpreter. We took a look at our budget, at our numbers, and our first response was we do not have it in our budget and declined our workshop. Little did we know of the backlash that would ensue as this person threatening us, saying, do you have it in your budget to hire a lawyer when I see you for violation of federal law?
It says this statement had opened our eyes to look into our budget and asking ourselves where did our funds go? Donations, vendor fees, fees for info booths, and other streams of income. Why was our budget so tight and strapped for funds that we could not afford an interpreter? The main reason they found was the venue. Within the past year, our Kentucky governor had cut funding of the parks in Kentucky. This forced parks in Kentucky to look for other sources of income, which raised rates to nearly double of what we had paid for the same venue in years prior. To assist with this rise in rate from the park system, we were forced to charge for space for our info booth from fee to $10, or from free to $10. That's what I was wondering when they said info booth fees. I was like, wait a minute, aren't they free? But apparently they went up to $10 this year. And they had considered raising our rates for our vendor booths, but for our 2017 event, we chose not to. And I have to say, their vendor rates are pretty low, so I probably still would have gone if they increased it a little. Also, with the cuts of funding to the parks, Waterfront Development Corp Board voted to charge park users a $3 fee for parking, and that won't take effect until after the event. So they were just going on to what was going on there. So they said, imagine our dismay when an unknown presenter comes to us as a volunteer to lead a workshop demanding to have an interpreter present and to pay out of pocket from an already tight budget. We declined simply because of budget constraints. We currently have several workshops lined up, and none of these workshops have a demand for resources. We had also turned down an entertainer after we had booked our main entertainment because she requested to be compensated. Fast forward, naturally the community has started digging. We now have hired an interpreter that will work with us for 2 hours minimum. We have found a generous anonymous donor that will foot the bill of any of an interpreter for us. We have found a space during our workshop schedule for the workshop. All we have left is to have the presenter accept our invitation. So she declined the invitation, withdrawing her workshop proposal. She reportedly said she was no longer interested. So Beach also offers a suggestion for the wider community, which can both help pagans with disabilities take part in events and help offset financial liabilities for smaller events. The pagan community needs to do more fundraising in order to develop an accessibility fund, which can help to offset the cost of interpreters and other services needed to accommodate persons with disabilities. She also added that pagan leaders and event organizers should develop relationships with the deaf community and American Sign Language interpreters. She thinks these relationships could help the pagan community become more inclusive and develop better understanding of the needs of deaf pagans. My only issue with that is fundraising in the pagan community is hard.
Yeah, it is very hard.
Being on both the board for the Tree Life Community Center and on the board for Pagan Pride Day, it is, sometimes it's like pulling teeth. Because, okay, so as a vendor at Pagan Pride Day, it's one of my more successful vendings. Out of the whole year. I do very well at Pagan Pride Day as a vendor. As a information booth for the Tree Life Community Center, we do good to walk out of there with $5 or $10.
Yeah. Yeah, repeatedly. And I mean, and that's with, and, you know. Yeah. You know,
so,
you know, and of course we put out a tip jar and everything for it. So, because I mean, all we're really doing is handing out information.
It's just the pagan community as a whole. I don't know if it's like the backlash from churches. From giving money to churches and stuff like that a lot of people just don't dominate much anymore in the pagan community. You see it all the time. Pagan organizations going under because they don't have enough funds because the owners have been using their personal funds and they end up, you know, having personal financial issues because they've been using their personal funds for it.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like the only pagan organizations you ever see that are even somewhat successful are the ones that are run by the owners of shops. Like, you have a shop, they're making their money off the shop, they're doing this organization on the side, and they're holding the meetings and stuff in the shop.
Yep. Yeah, I have kind of noticed that.
So, So I just, and like I said, if I had seen this, I would have brought it up sooner.
Right.
Now, the Pagan Pride Project has actually made a statement now, too. They made this statement on the 4th. It says, the Pagan Pride Project takes seriously any legal requirements to provide reasonable accommodation to guests who come to our events. The statement begins, many great ideas have been presented in this discussion and the discussion on other forums. The Pagan Pride Project will incorporate those ideas into an ongoing effort to ensure its events are open to all. Pagan Pride Days operate on a very limited budget and can only provide resources to the extent that funding is provided to the event from the community. However, the Pagan Pride Project remains committed to find reasonable accommodations for those who require them. So, I mean, in as much as events want to provide accommodations, I mean, unless someone steps up and help out, it's really hard to do that.
Especially when you're talking interpreter services, because they're not cheap. Number one, I mean,
no, because
you know,
I even got a quote from. They even got a quote from, I think it was Grove of Gaia, that helps host the Beltane Festival in Pittsburgh called Gaia Fest, and they got a request for a language interpreter, and they said they could not, or no, they were trying to get disability services help, and they said they couldn't help. And then she said she called the church that holds Gaia Fest, the Unitarian Church, annually, and found out one of the members of the church does deaf interpretation and was available. And the cost was $125 an hour.
Yeah, sounds about right.
If you need an interpreter for a whole day, could you, I mean,
8 hours?
That's what?
Yeah.
$1,100?
Well,
no,
and here's the thing. If that person was an interpreter through that church, they might have even been cutting a deal. You know what I'm saying?
So, I mean, I know the person was only asking for one. I mean, they were only asking for, you know, one workshop, probably, you know, less than an hour. But still, that's $125 that they may not have even had. Because I know
right.
that budget goes down to almost nothing right before the event because they have to prepay for everything.
Mm-hmm.
They make all their money at the raffles and stuff of the event.
Mm-hmm. That they do. Speaking of raffles, did you clean up on any raffles this year like you usually do?
I didn't even get to put in on it. They did the raffle throughout the whole day, and I didn't even get over there to put in on it. Because we were busy.
What?
It was just me and Rune.
You didn't even get...
My friend Eli was there, but she had her own booth to take care of. So, I didn't even get over to the raffles. Oh, that's a lie. I got over there once to donate from my booth, but... I didn't even get to put in on it this year. So that's 2 years in a row I haven't put in on any of the raffles.
For those of you who don't know, Samara has a really good habit of cleaning up anytime there's a raffle. And, I mean, she cleans up. It's hilarious.
Well, I do spend quite a bit on the raffle tickets, but for what I get back, I spend less money than if I had bought all the items.
Yeah, well, I remember.
And I do some of my Christmas shopping that way. Or I should say Yule shopping. I do some of my Yule shopping that way.
I think Kiss was going to kill you that one year.
Who?
Where, what? The year where every other ticket was yours?
Oh, that's when we won tickets to, I won tickets to go to Chrysalis Moon.
Uh-huh.
That was the first year Ravenfire and I got to go to Chrysalis Moon. I got some pottery. I got some Yule presents out of that, though, too.
Yeah. Well, no, 1 year it passed, like, every other, they were calling your name for everything.
Hey, it wasn't just me. There was two other people. It was, like, the three of us.
Hey, I got a bag of books out of the deal, so, you know, or a box of books.
Yeah. And Serenity got a pearl necklace.
And who?
Yes, Serenity got a necklace. Yes, she did. That Christopher Pinzak, picked on for. Okay, so before we go into upcoming events, do you want to tell everyone what you were talking about before we went to break?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess I should go into it real quick. This week, they actually had a big trial going on here at the federal courthouse, and it has everything to do with the fact that the state is trying to shut the only abortion clinic left in the state of Kentucky. They're actually trying to shut it down. Their argument, the state's argument, is that it's about women's health, and they're talking about the transfer agreement and the contract with the ambulance service and all this other stuff. And this all goes back to a 1998 law in Kentucky that was where they actually passed a law dealing with this kind of stuff. Basically, abortion clinics had to have a transfer agreement with a hospital. They had to have an ambulance service. They had to have a contract with an ambulance service, which they have. And part of the issue was that the hospital that they had the contract with got bought by or got into an ownership deal with Kentucky One Health, which is an entity that goes by the Catholic Ethical and Religious Guidelines. So, of course, they kind of lost their transfer agreement. And, of course, here in Kentucky, no other health hospital is going to step up and say, hey, sure, we'll have the transfer agreement. Well, that was problem one. And so what they decided to do was basically there for a while they were grandfathered in because of everything that was going on under the previous governor. He basically just kind of grandfathered them in under the law saying, you know, where this are, the way federal law is written, you know, if a woman goes to a hospital for treatment, they have to treat her regardless. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Well, there was a Texas law that was recently struck down by the Supreme Court that talks about some of these restrictions and trap laws or targeted regulations of abortion providers. And the one thing that happened up to this is when the new governor came into office, he basically said, you know, his people basically said EMW has to shut down. Well, you know, the order came down, and then, of course, EMW sued in federal court and got an injunction that keeps them operating until a full hearing could be held. Well, the hearing was what was going on in court this week. Some of the arguments the state made were very absurd. They even said, well, if EMW shuts down, women can go to Cincinnati, Indianapolis, or Nashville for a procedure. Okay. Now, like if you live in Louisville, Indianapolis and Cincinnati both are not that bad of a drive. But I'm sitting here thinking about, well, what if the woman lives in Letcher County, Kentucky? You know, 4 hours from Louisville, 5 hours from Cincinnati, 7 hours from Nashville, 8 hours from Indianapolis. You know, right now, EMW is the only clinic operating in the state of Kentucky. Kentucky is one of several states, North Carolina, Mississippi, or not North Carolina, sorry, North Dakota, South Dakota, Mississippi. There's a couple of others where we only have one clinic. They only provide abortions up to 20 weeks. They actually used to have a facility in Lexington that provided pill abortions, but when Governor Bevin came in and appointed his own people, they changed the regulations to basically say, well, EMW in Lexington can't provide pill abortions because they don't meet the whole arbitrary ambulatory surgical requirements, even though they're not even actually performing any procedures. They're just handing out pills. So, you know, and they keep saying that this transfer agreement is all about women's health. But like I said, you know, I don't understand how it could be about women's health if you think about when you're dealing with somebody who lives, you know, so far away from the state's only clinic, and that's the closest clinic to them, you know, and now you're going to tell them that they've got to go at least 2 to 3 hours longer away for the procedure. And in those states, number one, the states have to be able to take care of that population. Something that they saw in Alabama, because there was a clinic in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, there for the longest time that actually had gotten shut down. They actually got permits to, they actually sued and won in federal court and were able to reopen. But what happened was when that clinic was shut down, the other two remaining clinics in the state of Alabama weren't able to keep up. So if EMW in Louisville shuts down, how are the clinics in those other cities going to be able to keep up? You know, and so a lot of this, the reason I'm talking about this is kind of the intersection of religion and government, kind of the intersection of politics and religion, you know, people wanting to shrink government down so small that they can fit in your uterus. Personally, you know, as someone who works in healthcare, these regulations honestly are bullshit. The trap laws in Texas were bullshit. The laws basically saying that you have to have all this ambulatory surgical requirements, it's all bullshit. To be quite honest about it, an abortion procedure in the first or second trimester, and that's when 99% of abortion procedures are done, it's a very safe procedure. It's actually safer than carrying a pregnancy to term. You know, and the way Bevin and all of them are looking at this issue is they're looking at it from a religious perspective instead of from a health perspective. So that's what I was wanting to talk about.
Okay. All right. So that is it for tonight. I'm going to upcoming events. And if you have an event that you would like us to share, did you have something else?
No, I just said, alrighty.
Okay. And if you have an event that you would like to share with us, or you would like us to announce on the air, you can contact us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/treeoflife, LOUKY. Just message us and send us your information. The best way is hopefully if you have a Facebook event that really helps us keep them in order, because I say I'm interested in all of them and they show up on my calendar. That's how I keep track of them.
So it's probably not the best way, but it's the easiest way at this point. But let's see, what's coming up? So September 14th today through the 17th at La Florida Nature Sanctuary is the Wild Magic Gathering. Tickets are available at elvenhome.org. And I'm not sure if you can pay at the gate, but if you go to elvenhome.org, you could probably find out. I've seen pictures at La Florida, and it's beautiful. One day I will go. One day. The 16th, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., is the 17th Annual Grand Rapids Pagan Pride. It is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I do not have an actual address. For some reason, it just gives me Grand Rapids, Michigan. But check out Grand Rapids Pagan Pride for more information on Facebook. Also, the 16th is Dayton, Ohio Pagan Pride Day, and that is on Harshman Road in Dayton. More information is available at DaytonPaganCoalition.org, and that is 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday. Also, we have Tarot Workshop Discovering the Major Arcana, also this Saturday the 16th, at Mystical Heart Spiritual Center in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. So the cost of the class is $20. Let's see, we have Queen City Pagans Coffee and Conversation at Caribou Coffee in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sunday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Let's see, we also have Wickfest. Is September 21st, Harrison Bay State Park Group Camp. Information is available at wickfest.org. That's wicfest.org. And that's actually the 21st through the 24th. We also have Mabin Ritual September 22nd from 6 p.m. to 8:30. And this is, it looks like it's being sponsored by Misty Mountain Cups in Hendersonville, North Carolina. I don't want to say the address just in case that's somebody's personal address because it doesn't list the church or anything as being hosting it. So go to the Cups website for them. If you don't mind, it's Misty Mountain Cups, B-U-U-P-S. Let's see, we also have Hillfolk Hoodoo with Byron Ballard for September 22nd at Aries Moon Mystical Gifts in Lenoir, North Carolina. It's at 7 p.m. Tuatha Dé is having their first Drum Nation Drum Circle in 3 years. It's Friday, September 22nd, 8 to 10 p.m. Brookside Resort in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Indie Pagan Pride is September 23rd, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and that is at Broad River Park in Indianapolis, Indiana. Also, Piedmont Pagan Pride is September 23rd, and that is at 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Kevin Lofton Riverfront Park in Belmont, North Carolina. So also September 23rd, there's Ancestral Rites Pagan Pride Day 2017 at the Sevierville Civic Center in Sevierville, Tennessee. And that is 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Black Hat Society here in Louisville, Kentucky, are having a meet up September 23rd at Clifton's Pizza here in Louisville, Kentucky, and that is at 1 p.m. Let's see, there is the Tarot Intensive Beginner with Charity Pinkleton. Saturday, September 23rd, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at Aroma Gregory Soap and Tea Company in Nashville, Tennessee. And then, let's see, I'm going to try to get to at least the end of September. I know there's a lot of stuff going on. Sacred Balance, Harvest Labyrinth. This is being hosted by the Mother Grove Goddess Temple. It's going to be at the Cathedral of All Souls in Asheville, North Carolina. That's September 24th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. There's going to be a mediumship hub at the Louisville Spiritualist Center Tuesday, September 26th at 7 p.m. here in Louisville, Kentucky. There is the Tarot Salon September 29th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Heine Brothers Coffee on Gardner Lane here in Louisville, Kentucky at 7 p.m. Let's see. And then September 30th is Atlanta Pagan Pride Day 2017, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. At Howard Avenue, Decatur, Georgia. Nashville Pagan Pride is September 30th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and that is at Two Rivers Parkway in Nashville, Tennessee.
Now they're going to end it there. That's a lot.
You think they'll end it? That is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot.
It's that time of year for Pagan Pride Days.
It is. Tis the season to be pagan.
So, let's see. I'm not sure what is going on yet next week. So I think it's all going to depend on when Deborah Castiano can reschedule. So as far as next week, I don't know yet. So maybe she can reschedule for next week. Maybe it'll be the week after. We'll find out and we'll let you know. So but I am going to tell you that I'm in love with this book. Raven Power, have you had a chance to look at it?
I've looked at it some and I like it. I haven't had a as big a chance because of work to look at it as you have.
But it's a very empowering book, even just the first chapter. You've looked at the first chapter, right?
Oh, yeah. I haven't read completely through it, but, yeah, it's awesome.
It's very empowering. I can't wait to get her on. So, everyone, have a blessed evening. We will talk to you next week.
And y'all be safe out there until that time.
And let's see, I'm going to play a song from, it looks like Sentinel Grove is the name. And the song is called Pathways. Either it's Pathways
Ooh.
1 or just Pathways, I'm not sure. So everyone have a blessed evening, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
If I met you on this road, it was always meant to be.
are listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.